You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program here on the Liberty News Radio Network, coming to you from our flagship radio in Memphis, Tennessee, AM 1380 WLRM Studios. I'm your host, James Edwards. Keith Alexander is with me tonight as we welcome back to the show a guy I absolutely love. He has made more appearances as a guest on our show than any other individual. And as we always say, for very good reason, he tackles the issues as we try to do from a Christian perspective. And I dare say that there is no one who has been more of an authority on battling hate crimes, so-called hate crime legislation, and Jewish supremacism than Reverend Ted Pike. And it's my honor to welcome back the director of the National Prayer Network at truthtellers.org, Reverend Pike. Ted, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, James. A delight to be here.
Well, let's just jump right into it, because I know we only have you for two segments tonight. You wrote a very stirring piece on your website, truthtellers.org, Anti-Bias Laws Persecute Christian Businesses. We reposted that on our website. Folks, you can, of course, read it at either one. Anti-Bias Laws Persecute Christian Businesses. Ted, what's going on there? Break down the article for us.
Well, the basic issue which states such as Kansas and Arizona and now Missouri have been trying to address in the last few weeks and even months is that our traditional English law and the U.S. Constitution-based legal system says that the business you have labored to create belongs to you, you alone. The government, not a member of some minority, have a right to benefit from it. However, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 established a new legal system. It gave blacks, through such programs as affirmative action and forced busing and hiring quotas, superior rights over whites. And it also forbade property and business owners to discriminate against blacks in hiring and firing. And so thus, businesses no longer are owned by those who, through their hard work, created those businesses. Rather, government has the right to tell you how to operate your business, and minorities have the right to be hired by you and enjoy your business. And if you don't cooperate, you face huge fines as one who discriminates. Now, of course, the Civil Rights Act was not meant by its architects, including the Anti-Defamation League, to give special rights just to blacks. It inspired states to give the same superior rights to homosexuals. And now, increasingly, Christian business owners who refuse to lend their creativity to homosexual weddings are being prosecuted severely for discrimination. For example, here, right in my backyard here in Portland, Oregon, is a small Christian cake-making business called Melissa's Sweet Cakes. A couple of lesbians dropped in and wanted to order a special cake celebrating their wedding, so-called wedding. And these Christians refused to do it. They said, we can't, as Christians, endorse and lend our creativity to homosexuality. Well, of course, the lesbians reported them to the Bureau of Labor and Industries here in Oregon. They were indicted. They were found guilty of discrimination. And now they face literally hundreds of thousands of dollars of fines for the transgression of discriminating against a federally protected group, homosexuals. Now, what the states like Kansas, Arizona, and Missouri, primarily the Republican legislators, want to do is to restore the right to refuse service to anyone, literally anyone, by such businesses, primarily for religious reasons. And if you have a bona fide religious objection, the state will not be allowed to force you, as is happening here in Oregon, as happening in Colorado, and so on, to actually assist in a system and a morality which is contrary to your consciences. Now, of course, the conservatives have a record, Christian conservatives have a grievous record of passing up golden opportunities to push back this ADL-originated bias crime legal system, which has overlaid our constitutional system. And Governor, Arizona Governor Jan Brewer vetoed the bill when it was passed by both House and Senate. It was also abandoned by the Republicans in Arizona. It sounds like in Missouri also you have a governor who actually is quite adamant that he won't pass it. They all are terrified of being accused of discrimination. But the truth of the matter is that all free citizens of a sovereign republic have the right to discriminate in any way we really want to. We discriminate about the job we want or the education we get or the wife we marry or the car we buy. We're discriminating all the time. And just as our home is our castle, so our business belongs to us because we, through our perhaps blood, sweat, and tears, have brought it into existence.
Well, then, Ted, this is Keith Alexander. I'm a co-host here with James. Everything you said was absolutely right on. As I say, when you hit the nail on the head, you drive it straight. Isn't it ironic that these so-called paragons of tolerance are the most intolerant totalitarian people in the whole political spectrum now, the left?
Well, of course.
And furthermore, what about discriminating against the religious? You know, it's not just Christianity that condemns homosexuality. Islam does as well, and I'm sure virtually all of the world's major religions frown upon homosexuality. Why can't you act on the precepts of your religion? Why is it discriminatory to practice your religion?
Well, the one of the fundamental characteristics of all of the hate and bias crimes laws which have been originated by the Anti-Defamation League, and by the way, they are very vocal in admitting that fact, that they have foisted these laws on more than 60 countries worldwide. One of the most basic characteristics is that they are unequal. There is no equality under the law. There is no reciprocation, so that homosexuals you see are given, like blacks, like Chicanos, like women, like Indians, they're given superior rights over the whites. Therefore, if a homosexual commits a hate crime against another homosexual, or a Jew commits a hate crime against a Gentile, they are never prosecuted under hate crimes bureaucracies in Canada, Australia, America, and so on. It's very blatant. But you see, because the white Christian and male majority are viewed as traditional historic discriminators against blacks, homosexuals, etc., then they are indicted at the least provocation.
Ted, you've been coming on the show for 10 years. You've made dozens of appearances, maybe 100. I don't know if we've ever had a segment that powerful. We're going to come back and do another one right after this. Stay tuned, everybody.
Thank you.
It's March into savings time at veteran-owned Freeze Dry Guy. Are you prepared to save serious greenbacks before St. Patrick's Day? All Mountain House freeze-dried foods in number 10 cans, meats, entrees, and vegetables are now 20% off only at freezedryguy.com. These are long-lasting foods for emergency preparedness food storage with a guaranteed 25-year shelf life. These are easy foods for your camping, hunting, backpacking, and sailing adventures. These are delicious, nutritious foods, freeze-dried to lock in the taste, aroma, and freshness. And they're all now 20% off only at freezedryguy.com. This Mountain House food discount cannot be applied to other items currently on sale. But as always, you get free shipping from the Freeze Dry Guy within the lower 48 states. For more information, call 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD. March into savings, 20% off, now through Sunday, March 16th, only at freezedryguy.com.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test, available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
We fought. We learned, we struggled, we won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Searching, searching, every night and day, if we gotta keep on the run, follow the sun.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
Welcome back, everybody. I want to tell you that if you don't have a church in your local area that is producing good fruit and is nourishing you spiritually, I would encourage you to go to truthtellers.org. That's the website for the National Prayer Network and Reverend Ted Pike. There you can find his Sunday sermons and Bible studies and articles on politics and much more. Ted, I'm going to toss it back over to Keith Alexander, but I appreciate the parallel that you've drawn between the so-called civil rights movement in the 60s and the what they are calling the homosexual civil rights movement of today. I have no problem with the best man for the job getting the job. I don't necessarily want to see anyone passed over just because of what they may be, but I do believe with every fiber of my being that that should be the choice of the individual business owner. You know, there's no doubt about it in my mind that the civil rights movement in the 60s was ultimately nothing more than the abolition of private property rights and freedom of association on this continent. Yeah. And now we see it here with the homosexual movement. They are using that, the radical homosexual movement, they are using that template. And I see all of these heterosexual white... praise the civil rights movement. You can't, it's either all good or it's all bad. I don't see how you can praise the civil rights movement and then say you oppose what the homosexuals are trying to do. They are doing the exact same thing in essence. So I ask you this, Ted, with that being the case and that precedent already being set, is there any outcome we can expect in the future other than a complete and total victory for the sodomite agenda?
Well, actually the conservatives like the Family Research Council and others are writing some good material. The problem is they don't go deep enough. They teach the people that it's the bureaucrats who have somehow created this bias crime legal system. It's big government's fault and so on. It's the liberals' fault. These obscure terms are always used, and so the people really never get to the eye of the octopus. And instead, they flail around chomping at the tentacles of the octopus. Well, an octopus can regrow its tentacles quite rapidly. You chop one off, and in a few months, he's got a new tentacle there. And that's the same way with creeping socialism, the liberal agenda. And so that is one of the main reasons why the Christian conservatives basically don't get anywhere, especially against Obama and against one liberal administration after another. And so what I specialize in is going to the heart of the matter, historically showing exactly where these perverse systems, especially hate and bias crimes legislation, came from, which unfortunately in the 1990s, something like 45 U.S. State hate laws were passed by state legislatures, almost shooing them in. They are the easiest kinds of laws to pass because they are framed by the ADL in a high-sounding way. You know, who can be for discrimination? It's a kind of a toxic word. They've made it so odious that no governor will want to be aligned with any legislation that is accused of going back to Jim Crow laws and discrimination and so on. And
that's what we've said forever, Reverend Pike, on this show, that the civil rights movement was the camel's nose in the tent. And the Arabs know that if you let so much as a camel's nose in the tent, the next thing you know, the camel will be in the tent and you'll be moved out.
Yes,
this is
absolutely
what the civil rights movement did. It was the camel's nose in the tent for the radical egalitarian leftist agenda. And, of course, the architects of this agenda are none other than the Sons of Israel themselves. They are the yeast that makes the dough rise in every leftist program and project that has ever come down the pike. No pun intended, Reverend Pike.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. You see, the Civil Rights Act was passed when I was a senior in high school in 1964. But in 1967, Title 18, Section 2A was added, which is the so-called hate crimes provision of the Civil Rights Act. And basically what that says is that if any public figure so much as advocates ideas which incite some other person to commit an act of discrimination or a hate crime or whatever, then, according to Title 18, Section 2A, that orator, that pastor, that broadcaster may be hailed into court and tried right along with the active offender who actually shot up a synagogue or something like that. And so the problem was that the hate crimes provision of the Civil Rights Act was not readily enforceable until the federal hate crimes law, the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Prevention Act, was passed in 2009. But it was there in 1967 to lay a foundation for the possibility of indictment against those whose speech.
Well, the camel's nose in the tent, the proverbial
exactly
camel's nose in the tent. And
kind of,
all of these laws are written in the most general and innocuous language possible, but then they're only applied and only prosecuted, only prosecutions are against white Gentiles.
Yeah, yes, of course. And I have a video at truthtellers.org, which has been very popular. I think I probably have about 32,000 views of it. And it's of Eric Holder, Attorney General Eric Holder, in the Senate Judiciary Committee. And he is quite boldly, quite frankly, stating to the largely Republican members of that committee that, yes, Muslims will not be prosecuted under the hate bill, Jews will not be prosecuted, blacks will not be prosecuted. People don't believe that. Come to Truth Tellers. It's right there on the homepage. The Holder video documents that we now have a federal hate crimes law which is blatantly unequal in its enforcement.
Ted,
I
didn't mean to interrupt. We're running short on time. I was going to comment that you couldn't have a more appropriately titled website for your organization, truthtellers.org. And folks, Ted's on top of this. If anybody ever was on with regards to hate crimes legislation, so-called, we have to call it so-called, you know, he's on it. Ted, let me ask you this. You know, win or lose, and God knows I want to win for righteousness' sake, but we must all do our duty. What can people do to combat the radical homosexual agenda as it applies with these anti-bias crimes that are persecuting Christian businesses?
Well, we have to keep on top of new legislation to call even state legislatures, raise a ruckus, let the people in Washington know in no uncertain terms that we are angry. We will not vote them back in. But come to truthtellers.org. I will do my best to keep being a watchman on the wall and letting you know when these golden opportunities come for action. And when that time comes, we all have to get to those telephones and take that opportunity.
Make Reverend Ted Pike's website among your daily reads. I'm going to give the final word in this riveting and enthralling 30-minute conversation to Keith Alexander.
Well, now that all the dust is settled, folks, I think you need to come to the alarming conclusion that it is white Gentiles and white Gentiles alone who are the victims in 2014 America of invidious governmental discrimination. Is that too strong a statement to make, Reverend Pike?
Well, yes, absolutely. White Christian males, that's pretty much the in the crosshairs of the ADL conspiracy.
It's back in around 2000, Paul Craig Roberts wrote an article about WHAMs, white heterosexual able-bodied males, predicting all of this. He was prophetic, folks. Thank you so much, Reverend Pike. Love having you on. We look forward to having you on again in the near future.
Thank you very much.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
The Occidental Quarterly fills a unique niche in bringing together scholarly articles on a wide range of topics that are mired in political correctness elsewhere. It is edited by Professor Kevin McDonald, who's no stranger to listeners of the political cesspool. There are quite a few reasons for the precarious state of our civilization and our people, but one of the main ones is that we have lost the intellectual and moral high ground to a cultural elite that is hostile to our people and our culture. Those of us who are politically aware must understand that the elites dominating culture and the political process in the West are intellectually and morally bankrupt. TOQ is the key. Digital download subscriptions are only $30 a year. Subscriptions by first-class mail are only $60 a year. Go to TOQonline.com and click on Subscribe Now. In addition to receiving fascinating and informative articles, you will also be supporting the work of scholars who are part of a community defending our people and our culture with the highest level of integrity and intellectual sophistication. That's TOQonline.com. Subscribe now.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, The Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, it's a special night tonight here in the political cesspool on March 15th. It's a night during which not only are we interviewing two incredible guests, actually three. I forgot three. Yes, three guests tonight and four hosts. You know, it's a rare occasion indeed, a once in a blue moon occurrence that all four of the cesspool hosting staff members appear in the same broadcast. Me, Keith, Eddie, and Winston Smith. Winston Smith, who is joining us via telephone tonight, and he has one of the three great guests with him. Winston, how are you?
I am doing so great, James. I had a great time today. I'm building a chicken tractor, which is a mobile chicken coop, if you will. Got a lot of that done today. Beautiful day out here where I live. It's a welcome day. How are you?
I'm doing good. Like I said, it's just a great night to have all of the family in under the same roof, if you will, if you can call this broadcast a roof. And Eddie wants to say hello to you real quick before you introduce the guest. He just can't wait until his third hour introduction to say a word on the air.
I've got to say hello, my younger brother in arms. So we miss you so bad. I was talking to Brenda just the other day saying, God, I miss you so bad. I wish you were here. I miss those days, Winston, when you and me, you know, you and me, we used to work the board together. Sometimes with James would be off, and we just had a good time out in the bean field. I always call it out in the bean field. But about this chicken tractor, I want you to make me a potato cannon, my friend.
I actually have two in my garage. they're a lot of fun. We're probably not the best people to have those kinds of things, though, Eddie.
Eddie wants you to know he's running his fourth marathon here in a couple of weeks up in Nashville, and proud we are of him, certainly. So, but without further ado, Winston, I know that business must intrude this evening. You have a spectacular guest tonight who is on to promote one of his most recent titles. Why don't you tell us all about that as you introduce him and we get along with the program tonight?
All right. By the way, Stephanie says hi to Eddie.
Eddie says hello to any female that will acknowledge him, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Andy Nowicki, are you there?
Yes, I am.
This is a real pleasure. I'm glad I'm finally getting to you. It's been hard to square our schedules together, and well, here you are.
Yes, well, I'm happy to be here again on your show. You've been kind enough. You and the rest of your hosts have been kind enough to let me on your airwaves. Several times before, but it's been a little while, so it's good to be back.
The pleasure's all mine. Let me give our listeners a quick intro of you. Andy Nowicki, he has written four novels, titled Considering Suicide, the first one that I ever read by Andy Nowicki, and it was highly disturbing. The Columbine Pilgrim, which was even more disturbing. Under the Hill, which I've not read yet. Heart Killer, which was even more disturbing than the first two. he's written collections of short stories. He's a co-editor and a radio contributor at Alternative Right, which I visit frequently, and I hope you do too. He's written for several print and online journals of social commentary, including The Last Ditch, Talkie Mag, The Oxford Review, American Renaissance, and Countercurrents, North American New Right. I started reading Andy Nowicki's books. I don't know what really made me do it. I don't know if you contacted me, Andy, or if I contacted you. Sorry,
I don't remember either.
Sorry,
I said I don't remember either how it happened, but I'm glad it did.
Yeah. Considering Suicide was the first one I read, and I walked away asking the question that I usually ask you when we open our interviews. And that question is, what's the matter with you, dude?
And I still don't know.
All right,
I still can't give you anything
your,
but...
I'm sorry, I was talking...
Anything but vague answers. I could get on your psychiatrist's couch, maybe, and we could talk for hours, but I'm sure your listeners wouldn't necessarily be all that into such a conversation. So...
Well, you probably walk away asking the same question about me.
Yeah, maybe so.
All right. You have two books out simultaneously. Well, that's not the right way to say that. I want to talk about your the one you wrote before your current one, Lost
right.
Violent Souls.
Correct.
What a title.
Thank you. Yeah, well, I do thank you for liking it, but of course the title is not, it's taken from the T.S. Eliot poem, The Hollow Men. And I was actually quite surprised that it had never been taken for anything before, because it's such a portentous sounding turn of phrase. But I was happy to secure it for that book, which is a collection of short stories about various lost violent souls.
Mm-hmm. Now, Lost Violent Souls is my favorite kind of read. It's a collection of short stories that are related in the usual Nowickian themes of self-destruction, bitter outsiders, and worldviews that push the characters to the logical, violent conclusions of their philosophies. Why did you have something in mind when you started this? Did you intend to write these five stories as interrelated?
Well, it actually, it sort of came together over time, and they kind of fit together like puzzle pieces. These stories were written, like I said, over actually a long period of time. There's one story that in that collection that I actually wrote over a decade ago, the story Motel Man, which is the final of the five, the one that the note that we leave on, and the rest came much later. But they were all, I guess, initially conceived as, you know, standalone pieces, but then I came to see that there were some underlying threads and commonalities and themes, and thought that it would be advantageous to put them together and hopefully form a cohesive whole. And again, the title comes from the T.S. Eliot poem, The Hollow Men, and I'm a big fan of T.S. Eliot, and of course his most famous work is The Wasteland, which is a five-part poem, which I kind of like to flatter myself of thinking that I've written the Wasteland, the prose version of The Wasteland, of course, of it. I am definitely flattering myself and putting myself in company that I definitely don't belong in, but it's a nice thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me read off some of the titles, and then we'll, I don't think we're going to be able to talk about all of the stories for lack of time, but we can talk about one or two of them. The titles of these stories are, the first is Morning in America, Oswald Takes
right.
Aim. Oswald Takes Aim, I got to say, that was one of the most riveting things I've ever read. It was incredible. The third one is The Poet's Wager. The fourth is The Wooden Buddha. And the fifth is Motel Man. Let's start with Morning in America. It's about two young men, teenagers, who their names are Kip and Doug. And they are about to plan... something, and this is a story mm-hmm. that is ripped from the headlines. Would you tell listeners mm-hmm. about Morning in America?
Yeah, well, it, Morning in America started out actually as a short play that I wrote, and then I decided to try to convert it to short story form, and sort of took the conventions of the play and used it in the as part of the prose. In any case, the story is about, as you say, two young men who are meeting for an early morning breakfast at a Waffle House-type establishment just before committing some terrible atrocity. I won't, you know, talk. I'm not going to give any more away than that. But what interested me in it was what is it that goes through people's minds, people who have taken this decisive step to do something, you know, incredibly desperate and unforgivable that they will not be able to live down, that they'll probably go to hell for. You know, in the minutes before, them taking this action, what are they thinking? What's going on? And that was sort of the interest that I had in that particular story,
Morning
in America.
We're going to take a quick time out when we come back, more with co-host Winston Smith and our featured guest for the next couple of segments, Andy Nowicki, talking about his one of his most recent titles, Lost Violent Souls.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages, American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution. The Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Are you looking to experience the great outdoors in comfort? Are you sick and tired of sleeping bags that are too small, cots that are too narrow, or backpacks that just don't stand up to the wear and tear? Look no further than Teton Sports, a leader in quality, comfortable camping gear. Try our Teton Sports Mammoth 0° sleeping bag. This comfortable, family-sized sleeping bag can hold two adults and one child, or four young children. Its interior storage pocket holds wallets, keys, and other valuables. Or check out our Teton Sports Outfitter Extra Extra Large Cot, a camping cot with a steel frame. It's more than 7 feet long and 3 feet wide and supports up to 600 pounds. Then it folds up to a manageable 3.5 feet by 1 foot. Or our Teton Sports Explorer 4000 internal frame backpack. Its dual aluminum stays adjust to the contour of your back and can hold up to 4,000 cubic inches. Padded shoulder straps, padded waist belts, and padded lumbar area for maximum comfort with airflow systems to reduce heat. It's time you start camping comfortably. Look for Teton Sports products online or at a store near you.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Hi, welcome back, everybody. A busy night in the cesspool. Four hosts and three guests
myself, Keith Alexander, Winston Smith co-hosting with me this half hour, Eddie the Bombardier Miller waiting for the third and final hour. Among the guests, Reverend Ted Pike, Andy Nowicki, and then Mark, our economist friend, wrapping up once and for all in the third hour of tonight's show. Four hosts, three guests, busy night for the political cesspool. Andy Nowicki, author of many titles, including one of his most recent, Lost Violent Souls. Andy, before I toss it back over to my esteemed colleague, Winston Smith, to get into a more... to continue a more in-depth line of questioning, I would just like for you to very quickly offer us a synopsis of the book, just a general overview, and where people can buy it, and then we'll, again, toss it back to Winston for the more layered questioning.
Okay. Well, thank you, James, for giving me that opportunity. The book that we're discussing, that we're in the middle of discussing right now, is called Lost Violent Souls, and you can find it at on Amazon and Barnes and Noble .com and also probably lots of other ones, but the company that publishes it is Countercurrents, which is counter-currents.com. And the other book that we're probably not going to get to, but it's my most recent publication, is one called Beauty and the Least, and that's out from Hopeless Books, a new fledgling company run by my friend Ann Sterzinger in Chicago. And that can also be found on Amazon. And both of them are available both in print and in Kindle form. And Hopeless Books is hopelessbooks.blogspot.com.
Beauty in the Least, Winston Smith, sounds for a cause to have Andy back in short order. But before we get to that, let's return to Lost Violent Souls. Again, Andy, if you could, quick synopsis of what it's about before Winston continues on.
Okay, it's the book Lost Violent Souls is a collection of five short stories that are all about desperate characters living in modern times who decide to embark on some kind of decisive act. Sometimes it's a bad act, sometimes it's a good act, sometimes it's a questionable act, but they're all people who have who are fed up with modernity and the spiritual rootlessness of modern times in one way or another. Hello? Okay, yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
So can Stephanie. Stephanie was wondering what happened.
I just finished. Yeah, I can hear you. Yes, I just finished describing the book. Did that get through?
I'm sorry, Andy. Could you repeat that?
I said I just finished describing the book, and
yeah. Apparently, what happened is we lost James, and he didn't throw it back to me, and so.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't able to, so I don't know what happened. Anyhow, let's get back to the book. The one thing, I mentioned titles earlier. The title of the book, Lost Violent Souls, is striking enough. And Morning in America, that harkens back to Ronald Reagan's campaign, one of Ronald Reagan's campaign themes. He had a series of commercials called Morning in America, and yet here are these two teenagers about to perpetrate a ghastly atrocity. And then we go to the second story, to me, the best one in the book and one of the best things I've read in a long, long time, Oswald Takes Aim, about Lee Harvey Oswald. And you juxtapose that over the hope that was the embodiment of John F. Kennedy. His campaign was all about a new generation taking over and the hope of that new generation.
Hope and change.
Tell listeners about this story, Oswald Takes Aim.
Oswald Takes Aim is what's called an alternate history story. Maybe some of your listeners are familiar with that genre. It's set in an alternate timeline where things went differently based on a certain point of historical divergence. In my story, Oswald Takes Aim, which is the second story in Lost Violent Souls, Lee Harvey Oswald is up in the sixth floor, sniper's nest. The motorcade comes around in Dallas, but he gets cold feet, and he can't. In my story, he's not able to assemble his rifle in time, so the motorcade passes through, and he doesn't shoot Kennedy, and Kennedy lives. November 22nd, 1963. It's just another day. Nobody remembers it as a day of infamy. And so my story follows Oswald in this alternate timeline. What becomes of him is in the foreground, and also in the background is what happens to the world in general. What would have happened had Kennedy never been shot? Had he lived to the end of his first term, what might have followed?
I want to read part of it, and another reviewer has put this in his review. But to me, it is one of the best passages I've read in a long time in this excellent story. But I want to read it for people so they can get an idea of the prose.
Thanks.
Marina shook her head and scrutinized her long missing husband, a familiar expression of disdain returning to her once lovely features, which had hardened severely with age. Lee just never learned. No matter how many regimes dismissed him as a barely educated bumpkin, the man never even for a moment wondered if they may have a point. Instead, he always felt thoroughly convinced that he was destined for greatness. It was quite pathetic, really, the notion that a nobody like Oswald could actually have it in him to alter the course of history. That passage there flows so well, and it gets so deep into the psyche of his long-suffering wife, Marina.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that women in Lost Violent Souls take a more prominent role than they have in your other stories. In Lost Violent Souls, they are not likable, and it's a theme that's not unusual in your earlier works, but in Lost Violent Souls, they are more front and center, if not downright domineering. Why the sudden prominence, and why are they like they are?
Well, that's a big question. The character of Marina, I think the relationship of Marina and Lee Oswald is one that's always kind of fascinated me. I've always found Oswald himself fascinating, but the fact that he was able to, that a schlub like him was able to go over to Russia and really meet and marry this very beautiful girl who we think would be way out of his league is something that Marina was. You know, really a knockout. In that story, of course, I see where how their relationship develops, and it was already troubled by the time the Kennedy assassination took place in our universe, not in the universe of the story. But as far as the question of women in general, why they play a more prominent role? I like women. I'm fascinated by women, but it's hard to it's harder to write about a woman when you're a man, obviously. I guess that in the stories, the stories that follow in this particular anthology, if you will, or this collection of short stories, they're dealing more with relationships, I think, than maybe has been the case in things that I've written in the past, like Considering Suicide or The Columbine Pilgrim, where it was more about this man, this particular man who feels like an outsider and is plotting something. Although I would say also that in Heart Killer, one of the main characters, one of the protagonists, is also a woman. As well, but I think you're right that they do play a role, and in at least one of the stories, the lost violent soul is not the person that we think it's going to be. And I'm referring to the story, The Wooden Buddha. I guess I've kind of given that away now. But but the main character in that story, the narrator, first person narrator, is a man, but the lost violent soul is actually the woman. That he becomes involved with,
So, you know, that can happen too. I mean, we're all ensnared in modernity, and although it takes different forms and manifests itself in different ways for the male and the female, it still leaves us all, you know, similarly empty similarly unfulfilled. And so, you know, there's no reason why, no reason to leave the women out of it, I guess.
Well, Andy and Winston, they say time flies when you're having fun. It's certainly true on tonight's occasion. I can't believe that 30 minutes has already come and gone. Andy, if you could, one more time, plug the website where folks can get not just this book, but perhaps some of your other titles as well.
Okay. Well, as Winston said, I co-edit Alternative Right, which is alternative-right.blogspot.com. And this book is Lost Violent Souls. You can be found at Countercurrent or Amazon, and also Beauty and the Leaf, my latest book, which is published by Hopeless Books, and also can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and probably innumerable other places.
Folks, it comes with the endorsement of the Political Cesspool. I want to thank Winston Smith for making Andy Nowicki available to us tonight. We'll be back with a third hour right after this.